Well, I'm glad your football team isn't playing right now. And you chose to be here. And if you say my team is playing right now and I'm still here, well, God double bless you for that. What a great opportunity we've had today to do what we just sang, to express how worthy is our God and our Savior Jesus Christ. What makes a great piece of art a great piece of art is that you can look at it and see something and have somebody with knowledge come along and show you, now you know why these hues are this way in the sky, and you know why this person's over here on this side partially in shadow, and you know why that river is running rough there rather than smooth. It's all part of the picture. And then you go, oh, that's really something. I never saw that. I just thought it was a picture. Or you go to a movie and you come away and you say, that was really a fun movie. And then somebody says, fun? Didn't you get the deeper meaning of that? And they tell you, this is all about this, and this person's supposed to represent this. And before you know it, it's deeper than you ever thought it was. You go, wow, that was a powerful movie. Or you hear a song or a piece of music that somebody wrote. And they say, now listen, on this symphonic piece, notice how it starts out very softly. And then it builds. There's a reason why it's building. I remember the first time somebody told me about the 1812 Overture, Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture, and said, this is all about the invasion of Moscow by Napoleon. I'm a kind of dense guy. I said, you know, really, if they had wanted me to know that, they should have just said something like, tromp, 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 and fired a bunch of cannons. And I would have said, oh, I bet that's soldiers. Yeah, that is. And they're like, oh, yeah, those are little soldiers. Those are Napoleon's men. When you hear that music and you hear it explained and you realize this is this way because of this and these instruments are coming in because of this, it becomes so much more powerful. Luke chapter 15 is that way. You can read it on a simple level. There was a boy and he left home and he ruined his life and he came back to his father. But Luke 15, the parable of the prodigal son, is so many things. Jack and I were talking about that yesterday, and he was telling me about a number of sermons he has on the prodigal son that he's preached on that. And I think I told him, I think I've got 19 different sermons on the prodigal son. We could replicate this weekend together two more times and wouldn't have a single sermon that would be similar to the other sermons on that. And you may say, why would we want to do that? Well, I think there are some really powerful truths in this story that only after you squeeze it again and again and again do they really come to the surface and make themselves manifested. This is a prophecy of the Jewish-Gentile rift. The prodigal son represents the Gentiles who would be brought into this kingdom and would be resented by those who had been faithful to God all along. This is a poem. This my son was lost and has been found. He was dead and is alive again. Let us rejoice and celebrate. It's a poem. But it's something else. It's our story. It's where all of mankind is. All of us have at one time or another been man in innocence, the boy in his father's house. Man in sin, the boy having gone away. Man in redemption, the boy coming back, Father, I've sinned. And man in glory, let us celebrate. Even as we talked about that last night, the ultimate spring break. God's rejoicing over his own coming home. So let's read the story. And I want to tell you, the title of our lesson this afternoon is Lost Boy. how he got that way, and how he came home. The reading of the text. Luke chapter 15, beginning in verse 11. And he said, a man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them. And not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and he went on a journey into a far country, a distant country, and there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now, when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country and he began to be impoverished. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country. And he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating. No one was giving anything to him. But when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I'm dying here with hunger? I'll get up and go to my father. I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. So he got up and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion for him and ran to him and embraced him, kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, quickly bring out the best robe, put it on him, and put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And bring the fattened calf, kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost. He has been found. And they began to celebrate. I want to talk to you in this lesson about the prodigal son and how change occurred in his life, both negatively and then positively. We call him the prodigal son. Probably not a term that we should use because it's not used very much in our culture. When I was a little boy, I always tried to figure out songs that said things I couldn't understand by trying to get them in the context. And we always sang, God is calling the prodigal as an invitation song. So I got the idea pretty quickly. Prodigals are people who need to repent because it was an invitation song. So I figured whoever was being called as a prodigal needed to change their course of action. But if you'd asked me, what's a prodigal? I probably would have just said, he's sinful. That's not what the word means. Doesn't mean that at all. I'm not saying a prodigal isn't a sinful person, but if you're thinking prodigality is always immorality, you'd be wrong. We are all, in some ways, prodigals. Because the word simply means wasteful. That's all it means. Wasteful. So if you've ever eaten at an all-you-can-eat buffet and left food on your plate, prodigal. If you've ever bought food and threw it in the garbage can because you just made too much, prodigal. If you ever brought home a doggy bag and then a couple of days later threw it out, prodigal. If you ever spent money on something that you later regretted because you said, I didn't really need it, I bought it on impulse, prodigal. But I'm sure that that is not the person that we have in mind when we sing the song, God is calling the prodigal. I don't think everybody who says, oh, I ate at a buffet this week and I left food, let me come forward. I don't think we're thinking in those terms. So what's prodigal about the prodigal? Well, let me show you. Let me show you how he got to be where he was. out there in that field, wishing he could eat pig food. Because the steps of prodigality for him are threefold. First of all, the downward spiral for the prodigal son begins with selfishness. There is this two-word command he gives to his father that demonstrates his selfishness. Give me. Give me. There's not a please behind it. There's not a sense in which he doesn't deserve it. He says, in fact, give me what belongs to me. Now, I want to tell you something. What he's asking for doesn't belong to him. Not yet. On paper, it does. But I'm going to give it to you in terms that you will understand and see just how callous this boy is. Give me the share of the estate that falls to me. When? Falls to him when? When his father dies. What he's saying is, I want you dead. Because what you can give me is more important to me than you are to me. And if you won't die, then will you just give it to me now? I don't even want to wait for you to die. Just give it to me now. Give me. Give me. What selfishness. How little he thought of his father. How immature this sounds. Give me. Give me what's mine. Give me what will fall to me. And that is a sign of great immaturity. His selfishness leads him to become sinful. Verse 13, not many days later, he took all he had, gathered it together, went on a journey into a distant country, and squandered his estate with loose living. There's his prodigal streak. Squandered his estate with loose living. Now he's gone from being selfish to sinful. I do like the King James Version in that particular phrase because it says, wasted his substance. What's your substance? It's the essence of what you are. It's the core of what you are. He wasted what he really was. He's not spending excess. He is burning off his essential nature. His selfishness now has led him to be this sinful young man. Note the wording of this. He went into a far country. Distant country. What is he doing in that distant country? What's happening there? Well, he's gone far away from his dad, the influence of his home. He thinks, if I can get far away from that, then it no longer has rules or regulations for me. His brother will say of him, he has devoured your wealth with prostitutes. I'm going to guarantee you that he is not wasting his living and all that he has on video games or food. He is destroying himself with every kind of vice imaginable. I have no doubt he's buying drinks for everybody. He's probably gambling some of it. He is paying it to women of the night for sexual favors. He may be embracing a drug culture of his day. And when he had spent everything he had, where? A distant country. Now, I do want to say something about distant countries. There is a sense in which we think if we'll stay close to our core, that we can't get caught in sin. So as long as I'm going to church regularly and I'm still living at home and I'm still giving lip service to my parents and to the word and to truth, that I'm not going to get involved in any kind of illicit activities. If I just don't go out there, and sometimes I think even parents may think, you know what, we'll keep our children close to home. We'll put them in college right here next to us so we can watch them, because if we send them off somewhere, they go into that distant country, we can't watch them, we can't keep them. I want to tell you something. Sin is as close as your heart. You can get caught in sin right at home. And you can get caught in sin right in the midst of righteous people. In the midst of them. In Galatians chapter 5, the sins of the flesh that are mentioned there, most of them aren't physical activities, they're emotions. Jealousy, bitterness, anger, wrath. Those are emotions. We can experience that right here. And nobody would even know it. We could be looking at somebody else and saying, boy, I wish I had his clothes. I wish I had her earrings. Wow, that's some ring she's got. I wish I had that. How come she's got it and I don't? Or look at that happy family and how come we're not that way? Or I even wish I had a family at all. Or did you see the cars in the parking lot? What are some of these people driving? How come God gave them those voices and I can't sing like that? We can have that kind of jealousy and envy right here, right here. We can have that kind of hatred right here, right here. You don't have to be in a distant country for that to happen. Selfish to sinful practices, ultimately to suffering. Oh, it turns ominous. You can just see him going out every night. His pockets are full. He's got what my Texas friends call whip out. And he's loaded. He got money. They want a drink. I got money. I'll pay for it. Hey, let's go out to dinner. I'll pay for it. Hey, let's pick up some women. I got it. No problem. Let's rent a stretch chariot. I got it. Yeah, I'll cover it. And everybody's happy. They love coming to his house. Hey, let's go see the prodigal. They don't call him that, but that's what he is, because he's wasteful, man. He'll spend it anytime you need it. And then it says this, with all of that, he squandered his estate with loose living. Hear the music? That's happy music. I mean, everybody's celebrating. The disco ball is spinning and the lights are there and he's having a good time. And then the next verse says this, and when he had spent everything. Oh man, everything. There came a day when he reached into his pockets and pulled them out and there was nothing. Oh no, no money. Go to the bank. Hey, I need to get some more money and draw off of that. There's no money here, sir. He swiped his credit card at the store and they said, declined. Declined. Everything he does is declined. Oh, wait a minute, I gotta eat. No. You don't have money, you don't eat. Well, I'll go back. You don't have a home. You lost that, you didn't pay the rent. Well, let me put on my best clothes and go look for a job. There are no clothes anymore, man. They're gone. What's on your back is all you got. When he had spent everything. What happens? Severe famine came. Now, I don't think the famine is necessarily critical to this story, except it hastens his suffering. That's all it does. I mean, he'd have been suffering if there had been a famine or no famine, because he didn't have money. Even if there's ears of corn all around him, he can't eat them because he can't buy them. But the bottom's dropped out of his market. He's got no opportunity. When he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred, and he began to be in need. Now we're talking serious need. We're not talking about, oh, I'm going to have to cut back on the cable. I can't get the deluxe package. I can only get the basic package. Or I'm just going to have to do with Hulu. I can't even get the cable. And I had to give up my cell phone. I tell you, it's a really hard world we're talking about here. Had to trade in the deluxe chariot, and I got one of those eco chariots now. You know, barely one person can fit in it. Oh, we're not talking that. We're not talking that. He reached a point where he had nothing. And it says he went and hired himself out. I want to tell you about that hiring out. What's left when everything else is spent? Humility and pain. Pain. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 25, there's a statement that's made about Moses there that I think is really pertinent to all of us. When I talk to young people, I am blessed to work around a lot of young people and to get to interact with them at our congregation now. I always tell them this. I said, I am not going to tell you sin's not fun. It is. Sin is fun. It is pleasurable. But you got to understand, it's a passing pleasure. It's not permanent. Satan never intended for you to be happy all the time. He intended for you to be happy long enough that he can pull the rug out from under you, and now you've got absolute, abject misery. That's what he intended. You know what Hebrews calls it? The passing pleasures of sin. Moses chose to endure hardship with the children of Israel rather than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Is it pleasurable? Yes. Can you enjoy it? Yes. What's the problem with it then? It's passing. It doesn't remain. It doesn't stay. Are you happy when you're drinking? Oh, I've seen people who were. But they're not so happy the next day. And I'll tell you when they're really not happy, when they can't get the drink anymore. The drug addict, he probably has experiences you and I have never had. Or she goes places with those drugs we've never been, enjoys a bliss we don't know, but when they come down off of that, there is a pain we don't know. And the people who engage in premarital sex or extramarital sex, do they have pleasure? I have no doubt about it that that is a pleasurable thing for them, but it is so temporary. Because when the unwanted pregnancy comes, there comes pain. And when the mate finds out, there comes pain. That pain is financial, and it's emotional, and it's spiritual, and it's relational, and it's mental. Passing pleasures of sin. So where do we see him? He's sitting in a pig pen, lifting pods out of a bucket, feeding it to pigs. Pig slop. Pods. There are so many things about that scene that are so heinous to a Jew. Heinous to a Jew. You see, Jews are forbidden pork. They didn't raise pigs, and they didn't eat them. Now, a pig that would encounter a Jew, if he could think, would say, "I have no fear from this one." A pig encountering a Texan would say, "I'm dead." Here is a boy who's now engaged in feeding animals that he has never in his former life even interacted with. I've tried to think, what would be that heinous to us? And the thing that would probably be that way to me is if I had to just every day take care of a bucket full of slugs. There aren't very many creatures I know of that are nastier than slugs. From the color of them, I mean, even the name is a heinous thing to us. I don't know anybody that says, "Hey, what color is that? That's a beautiful color." "Oh, it's slug brown or gray." And they leave that slimy trail everywhere they go. And should you ever step on one, Now imagine taking care of slugs every day, putting your hands in a bucket of slugs and bringing them up and feeling how revolting that would be to us. But even that doesn't compare to this, because there's no immorality issue in dealing with slugs. They're just nasty. This boy is feeding pigs, and he's looking at what they're eating. It's called pods. And he's actually thinking that looks good. Now, I don't know what those pods may have looked like, but I will tell you, the whole concept of pods is a little bit of a turnoff. I've never been to a restaurant that called itself an all-you-can-eat pod house. I mean, there's nothing makes us salivate about pods. If I said banana pudding, some of us go into salivation mode. But if I say pods, none of us goes, "Oh, I'm hungry." But this boy gets that way. He's looking at that food and he's thinking, "That looks good." That's how far he has fallen. Selfish, sinful, suffering, and the final point about this, he is separated. He is separated from his father. He is separated from everything that could bring him relief. He's lost. That's what the father says of him later. He was lost. What is something that's lost? What does that mean, lost? It means it's not where it's supposed to be. I'm at the age now in my life, and I have enough things that I have to carry with me that any time I get up to go out of the house, I go into the old man Macarena dance. I have my phone, I got my keys, I got my wallet, you know, I'm tapping everything. I've got my pen. Yeah, good, I'm good. Yeah, I'm ready to go. But if my wallet's not there, where is it? It's lost. Oh, my wallet's lost. No, my wallet didn't crawl off. It's just not where it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be in my back pocket. It's not there. This boy is lost. What does that mean, he's lost? He's not where he's supposed to be. That's what you and I have got to understand about sin. Sin puts us where we're not supposed to be, where God never intended us to be. That's where this boy is. And then a change occurs. How does that change happen? Well, first of all, it has to happen after he looks up from rock bottom. He's got to hit the bottom and realize whatever course of action I've taken has not gotten me where I want to be. This is not where I need to be. And so his change is prompted by a recognition of three things. Listen, three things he realizes that bring about change. Number one, that there is a goodness in God that will allow him to change, that he doesn't have to stay where he is. He says, "How many of my father's servants have more than enough. Back there is goodness. Back there is relief. I don't care what you've done in your life with your life. God is good. You can come home. I mean, if you're willing to, you can come home. Doesn't matter what you did. There is nothing so heinous, nothing so despicable, nothing so low, nothing so hurtful, nothing so broad, nothing so continuous in your life that it will keep you from the goodness of God if you want to come home. This boy has really blown it. All that his father's given him is gone, but he says, I can go home and my father will feed me. Secondly, he realizes God's judgment. This is judgment on him for what he did wrong. He isn't blaming anybody else. He's not saying, pick the wrong friends, pick the wrong number on the horses. I should have spread my money out, should have put it in another bank, should have done this, should have done that. If I had only done this, things would have been different. He realizes, I am dying with hunger. That's a pretty proper assessment of himself. He looks in the mirror and he doesn't say, I think I can get out of this. I think if I just change a little bit of this, we play those games with ourselves. But when we realize this is a judgment of God, I am where I am. Only then, when we associate consequences with our actions, can we come back. And the third and final thing, God's goodness, God's judgment, and God's sorrow. That God cares, that it bothers him that these things happen to us. That he's not standing there with his arms folded, tapping his foot, saying, you deserve it. You deserve what you get. I don't even want to hear it. I will say to my father, I've sinned. Make me as one of your hired men. And he believes his father will respond to that because he goes. So he has this change of heart. When he came to himself. And then he acts on it. He acts on it. You know, I have had some of the greatest resolutions to be a greater person than I am. When I'm laying in my bed at night just before I fall asleep. I have. I've laid there and thought, you know what? I ought to just drink nothing but water for the next year. I'd be so much healthier. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. I'm just going to drink water. I'm not going to have sweet tea, soft drinks, just water. For a year, I'm going to do that. Or I'll say, you know what? I'm going to get up tomorrow morning. I haven't been doing this. I'm going to get up. I'm going to run. I'm going to run for 5 miles tomorrow morning, and I'm going to do that every morning. You know what? Tomorrow morning, I'm going to get up and read my Bible for 30 minutes. I'm going to get up, and I'm going to read my Bible 30 minutes every single day. That'd be good for me. I need to do that. And you can put any number of things on there you want, but you know what happens to me? I go to sleep. And the next morning, those resolutions are gone. It's not enough for you to make the plans. You got to do something with it. And I think in any given audience like this one, there are probably people saying, that man's right. What he's saying is right. I got to do better with my life. You're saying that? And I want to tell you, there is Satan sitting on your shoulder saying, hey, don't take that too seriously. I mean, take your time. You don't have to do anything about that yet. Just think about it. The guy's pushing you. You want to sleep on it. I love this statement. He got up and went to his father. Nothing happens till you get to that point, folks. Nothing happens till you get up and go to your father. And then he had this great change of life. Conclusion. He goes from selfishness to selflessness. Do you hear it in his words? Make me as one of your hired men. Before it was, give me what is mine. Now it's, make me a servant. And he goes from sinful, squandered his estate with loose living, to I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. Sinner to a repenting sinner. And then he goes from suffering to joyful. He had nothing. Now he's got the big party. His dad's killed the fattened calf. They all go in. They're making music. They're dancing. They're having a wonderful time. And he is now back where he needs to be. He's joyful. He's got a clean robe on him. And he's got a signet ring from the family on his hand. And he's got sandals on his feet. And everybody's gathered in a big room. And they're all high-fiving him and welcoming him home. He went from having nothing to having everything. And he went from separated in the distant country to being reunited with his family. He's come home. How does that happen? You recognize the sorrow of God over sin. You recognize the goodness of God in allowing us to come home. And you recognize the judgment of God on those who continue in sin. The prodigal son. How he became prodigal and how he came home is exactly the same way you and I come home. So if you recognize the sin in your life and it's caused you to be dying with hunger, maybe it's time you came back to the Father. We're going to sing this song of encouragement that Rod's going to lead us in. And if your heart moves you to embrace the Christ who died for you, don't put that off. Whatever you need to do, whether it's to be baptized into Christ to wash away your sins, or whether it is to come back to the Lord and say, I haven't been the servant I need to be, but I am repenting of that. If there is something we can help you with, we invite you to come now to the front while we stand and sing.
God is calling the prodigal, come without delay. Hear, oh, hear him calling, calling now for thee. Though you wander so far from his presence, come today. Hear his loving voice calling still. I hear him calling now for thee. Now for thee. Oh, weary prodigal, come. Prodigal, come.
great gospel preaching is about storming the will of man. That's what Brother D always told me. But I'll tell you what else it is. It's about shaking us to the reality of truth. It's when we come to meet the Word and understand that we need to live by it in order to be right with God and to be happy. Thank you, Brother Ralph, again for another wonderful gospel sermon. I want to thank all of our visitors who are here. Appreciate your coming again. Thank you so much for taking your Saturday afternoon to be with us. I want to thank Carl Anderson for leading our prayer from the Murphy Road Church in Sugar Land, Missouri City. And I also want to thank Brother Casimir, who is here from the Cypher congregation, as he will be leading us in prayer as we're dismissed from this assembly. We've got Sunday left of our gospel meeting, so those of you on Sunday night who might want to come back over here away from your local congregation, we'd love to have you come back and hear some more from Brother Walker. If nothing further needs to be added, Brother Rod's going to lead us in one more song, and then Brother Casimir will direct us in prayer.